does seem pretty outlandish on first glance that a landowner would pay somebody who worked 1 hour the same that the landowner would pay somebody who had worked all day long. In this country where we really are very conscious of equal pay for equal work and minimum wages and all that kind of thing, it's a hard story to swallow. And so when they're griping, we can maybe say, yeah, I can understand that. But you know, the truth of the matter is, if we look at the story from Exodus, there might have been some complaining there too. Because as we read it, it says to the effect that those who collected plenty had it, and those that collected just a little had enough. It didn't matter how much they collected. You could look over there and see old Pete being lazy and picking up a little bit of manna at a time. And over here, John could be going like crazy picking up manna. And they all ended up with just enough. Well, we know that the Israelites were not exactly slow to complain. So there probably was some complaining when so-and-so got just as much manna as the other person. But I believe if we look at this story of Exodus, somewhat maybe differently than at least I've looked at it before, we'll find that this story of Exodus is basically very formative to not only the story of the Israelites, but we'll also see some of the very basis for what we hear in the New Testament down in this story as well. What you have here is interesting. Think about it. They spend 40 years in the wilderness. I believe Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness before he began his ministry. I believe these 40 years are similar to Jesus' 40 days in that they are formative in the basis of their lives. Jesus spends those 40 days in the wilderness being tempted, which I believe helped Jesus become much more compassionate and understanding of the ordinary people that he was destined to work with. He would be able to understand their ways and their temptations because he himself had been exposed to those same things. Now, the 40 years in the wilderness, however, are very important formative years for the Israelites. Slavery. Look where they've been. They've been in slavery. They have been taught to get up, go work all day long, go home, go to bed, get up the next day, go to work, or work all day long, go home, go to bed. And despite what they remember having all this wonder memory, we can doubt their memories. Life was not easy. These people are not really prepared for the independent lives of landholders in this land of milk and honey to which they are going. These 40 years have to be formative years to train them how to be responsible yet free people. And when this story occurs, they've only been in freedom for a couple of months. So they're still learning exactly how to behave as free people. They are maybe comparable to adolescents. Any of you those at home or have raised them might remember, they test a little bit. Those curfews get nudged out. All those little things that they try to not do what you want them to kind of do. I think the Israelites are kind of in that same stage. They're learning how to experience and use their freedom responsibly. And so these years in the wilderness are years that God is using to help form them into the people they need to become. And so we have some things here that I believe are important. One, God wants them to learn to depend upon God and for everything. They need to be God-centered people. They've been Pharaoh-centered people up until now. So they need to God to become God-centered, God-dependent people. They need to know that God will provide. And it's not going to happen in one quick and easy lesson. We all know that from raising children. It has to be repeated over and over again, and eventually God will get it. God has already provided them safe passage through the water. God provided them sweeter water in the wilderness when it was bitter. And now they're complaining about not having enough food. But God is going to send them quail. God is going to send them this white stuff every day. And they provided for. Part of the instructions are they're to gather for 6 days. And on that sixth day, they are to gather double the ration so they'll have enough for the seventh day, the Sabbath. If you'll recall, as they came through those waters of the reed or the Red Sea, whichever way you want to translate it, I compared that to a new creation. And if you'll recall, at the time of creation, God took that seventh day and rested. So God is trying to establish a rhythm in these people's going to work. 6 days, they're going to work. The seventh day is a day of rest. It is the Sabbath. They haven't known that while they've been slaves in Egypt. They've had to work 7 days a week. They will now have a Sabbath day upon which to reflect, to rest. And so they're learning a rhythm of life which uses the same formula that God instituted at the beginning of creation. 6 days of work and one of rest. Rest, reflection. But God does not want that seventh day to become also an oppressive day where you have to follow rules or do anything else. God says, gather enough food for that seventh day. And if they do that, they have that day free to reflect, to rest. That seventh day is not to become and laws to be followed. And Jesus reminds us in Mark, the Sabbath was made for the people, not the people for the Sabbath. I believe there's a third thing that they learn in this time period. There will be plenty. They need to trust that there will be plenty. And they are to live on a daily basis. I hear echoes of the Lord's Prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. It gives them sufficient. What God gives them each day is upon it. And they need to learn to rely upon that. There's a point at which Moses gets angry at them because they tried to gather too much and save it. I believe that Moses is not angry at the very act that they tried to save it, but what that act implies. Because God has a rule of the economy in this day that we have pretty much forgotten in this day. That there is enough to go around to everybody. Everybody will have sufficient. Everybody will have exactly the same amount. We see this reflected in the New Testament time and again. If you have a coat and somebody wants your coat, you give it to them. It means you had one too many coats. And they don't. There should be enough for everybody. And so more than they are, Israelites try to collect to that than they are need, they're falling into that idea of hoarding. And there should be no need for hoarding. There's no need to be building storehouses for all of the plentiful produce out of the farming that they might do. We read a story in the New Testament where the wise farmer decides, self, I have plenty to for my family now, I'm going to build another barn. And God does not want us to hoard. God does not want us to say, there's only enough for me and not enough for them. God wants us to understand, and wants the Israelites to understand, there should be enough for all. In our country, it's particularly difficult to remember this kind of theology. We have this bit of plenty where we are encouraged to be consumers. We face an onslaught of advertisements that try to tell us we need this and this and this and this for the perfect life. We really don't. How many of the things do we have in our houses that we don't really need? Of all of the houses on my street, I don't think there's anybody who parks their car in the garage. It's called stuff. Too much stuff. And yet, we are addicted to it. And God is saying, you will have enough. Don't worry. There is enough. Always enough. But our natural tendency is to worry. We must save for a rainy day. And if that rainy day never comes, oh well. Statistics show that Americans use the majority of their income, however, on stuff. And I'm afraid that our churches can fall into the same sort of trap of thinking we don't have enough. In our churches, we need to be thinking God will provide us a way to do everything we do. And I don't know how many times Pastor Chris and I have said, it always works out. There's enough. It works out. It does. It works out. We commit ourselves to doing something, and like yesterday, it is a wonderful success. It is too easy for us to see what we don't have. We have an old building, and sometimes, like last Sunday, we're on top of each other. But isn't that the greatest problem on the earth to have? It is. There are some, how are we going to keep us out here who are trying to figure out how are we going to keep our doors open? Because we're exploding, can hardly keep ours closed because we're exploding out. We have enough. We have more than enough because we have the Spirit of God. We are full of the power of God. And we have to remember that we can do whatever we feel called to do. Because God will provide a way. In this time in between, it's been easy to think, oh, we don't have a full-time pastor, co-pastor with Pastor Chris. But you have had interims, and not all churches have those. There have not been huge gaps in the program. In fact, there's been so much program going on that Pastor Chris and I can hardly cover everything. So often in interims, the income of a congregation goes down. But ask Brooke. Ours has remained steady. This congregation is blessed with enough. And we need to live into a future that says we will always have enough and stick our necks out and risk for God's world and to live out the reality of God's economy that says there is enough for everybody. And if that is the message God wants the Israelites to understand, if that is the message that landowner believes in, that he can be generous to a fault, then we are called to do exactly the same. Because God will give us what we can, and we can be generous to a fault for God's kingdom. God's will be done. God's will be done. And we will be part of it. But we must step out like the landowner and give as if we truly believe God will provide for each and every one of us.